talked the other night on looking at truth along a straight line, which is a remarkable teaching that Rumaster gave to me privately. I'd never heard her say it before or after that. And I found it, while it resonated in a deeply intuitive way, it's taken many years to really see what she was talking about. I talked in a very general way the other night. I want to talk in a little more specific way tonight or today. This is such a really helpful teaching . The approach I ended up taking in talking about it actually presumed something. And what it presumed is that our natural relationship to truth is complicated and direct. And that what happens is, sometimes anyway, is that influences, both within ourselves and, if we allow it to happen, influences from others that we take in and make our own, can distort that direct and straight line, that direct and uncomplicated relationship. It wasn't until after I did the talk that I thought, you know, actually I'm actually presuming something that actually many people might not presume. But it's something that I believe I've proved true for myself, that we do have actually a natural and uncomplicated direct apprehension of truth, and it takes something to skew it. It's like saying that we have the Buddha nature. From the beginning we have the Buddha nature, yet we, due to the actions of karma, due specifically to consequences of greed, hate, and delusion, we get blinded to our Buddha nature. It's really saying the same thing. If one takes that approach that you presume, you start from the position that our relationship, our natural relationship to truth is direct and uncomplicated and accurate. And a better word really, that we're naturally in harmony with truth. Then that we can look at the various kinds of influences that can somehow complicate or distort that relationship, or seem to do so. And really, it just lines up as good old greed, hate, and delusion, if you think about it. Wanting things to be other than they are. Blaming ourselves. Blaming others. Allowing ourselves to sink into doubt and confusion. That's the basic nature of those influences that can distort our understanding of truth, prevent us from looking at truth along a straight line. One could also ask, well, you know, what, when we speak of truth, what are we talking about? Well, there's two basic aspects. There's the truth that has to do with the world of our senses, the world of changeableness. And basically, it's truth that has to do with the recognition and acceptance of the basic characteristics of the world of our senses. Those characteristics are changeableness, and that there's suffering, and that there isn't a self within it. Then there's the truth that has to do with the unchanging. And we need more than just our intellect and our physical senses for understanding that. We need to be able to rely on faith and on our spiritual intuition. When I think of greed, hate, and delusion, I kind of think of three things that are in a way kind of superficial. They've got this, it's like kind of like a little troll hiding under the bridge there. They're kind of up on the bridge, and there's kind of this little troll hiding under the bridge. And what is that troll? Well, it's self-judgment, actually. I always talk about the root of suffering really being basic form of ignorance, really being self-judgment, and the mainspring of rebirth in the realms of suffering is self-judgment. And if we think of, for a moment, about, just think of guilt for a moment and the way that distorts our understanding of events. Think what guilt does when people look, when we look at the world through the with guilty eyes, when we look at our own actions, if we look at our own past with guilt, it's kind of like wearing a pair of spectacles and looking at events, but the spectacles are not the right prescription, so that everything is smeared and distorted. And again, the basis of guilt is self-judgment. You know, guilt is a self-blame, really. It's holding something against oneself. If we look at the Sangha verse, you know, the verse for doing an act of contrition in a formal way in our school of Buddhism, it's interesting that Rinmasi used to point out, you know, there's no guilt in it. It's just, you know, all wrong actions committed by me from time immemorial have been and are caused by greed, hate, and delusion. You know, wrong actions cause greed, hate, and delusion. Born of my body, mouth, and will, it's with my body, my mouth, and my will, and my intellect. You know, I made these choices, I did these things. I now make full and open confession thereof. Not confessionally, mea culpa. Look how bad I've been. Look how I share the guilt of others, or look how I've created my own load of evil. It's looking at actions just in terms of cause and effect, just recognizing, ooh, there's something that was a mess. Now that I see, you know, what I did there, that's definitely something I don't want to, and its consequences, that's something I don't want to repeat. It's looking at it just in terms of, you know, what are the actions, what are the consequences? You know, the consequences show, if things are miserable enough, they certainly show us You know, we don't want to do that. I don't want to walk down that road, however tempting it might be. And of course, this is why we have the precepts. The precepts come from this people's experience in exactly this way. Looking at, you know, experiencing, this is, you know, whatever anyone said, this is really not a good thing to do. You know, no matter what I thought at the time, this is not a good thing to do. And it's a big difference in looking at it with guilt and looking at it without guilt. It's all the difference in the world. To look at it without the guilt is to see in a more objective way, oh, this action and these consequences are necessarily connected. If I don't want the consequences, I don't want to do the action. You see? So in the future, from where I am now, I want to do things differently. I don't want to keep producing those same effects. That's a particularly true when there's something that's been deeply habitual and you see a repeated pattern. One doesn't need to add anything to that. Oh, how wicked I've been. And one doesn't need to see others in that way either. If others have done things that are have resulted in a lot of suffering, one doesn't need to add to it one's own blame. And then one comes to recognize, well, if I add my blame of others into the mix, well, I'm actually only hurting myself. If we're not going to blame ourselves, then we can't blame others either. That's part of the deal. If we're not going to despise ourselves, then we can't despise others. If we're not going to judge ourselves, then we can't judge others. Because if we judge, despise, or blame others, inevitably we'll do it to ourselves. There is no fundamental separation or difference between self and other. This is something we can prove true. You know, try really blaming someone and see if you can stop yourself from blaming yourself for the same thing when you do it. You won't be able to. Because if you can forgive others, then you can forgive yourself. And if you can forgive yourself, you can forgive others. So, you know, if I look at my own past actions along a straight line, if it's going to be a straight line, it can't be one that's warped by the influence of guilt. And if I'm feeling guilty, and it's natural enough to go through periods of feeling guilty, then I need to really sit still with the guilt until I'm no longer under its influence and I can see things clearly as they actually are, and just in terms of the cause and effect and what is really good for me personally to do or not to do. Because while I live, if I live under this heavy influence of guilt, I actually can't see clearly the mechanism of things. You can't see clearly how to get out of, especially one of these habitual patterns. Rinpoche Master used to call Sangha, contrition, self-forgiveness. And you can see why it's so important, so crucial, that there be self-forgiveness. Because before we can cut through the patterns of habitual causing of sufferings, we've got to cut through the pattern of that prevents us from actually being able to see clearly the nature of the act. So it often works out that where we have to start with is the guilt or the self-blame. And that can turn out to be the most difficult part of the whole thing. Now here's another thing. There's this kind of feedback thing with guilt, with any kind of self-judgment, self-blame. here's a feedback thing that let's start from the point where you you did something really foolish and it was just a big mess and you hurt yourself, maybe you hurt someone else too. Let's start from that position. You got to start from somewhere, although it's really, there's no starting point, but let's just start from that. That's happened. And then one realizes, what one begins to really realize what one's done, maybe one gets caught at what, and that and stopped by other people in some way, and then you get not only your own blame, but your the real or imagined blame of others, you know, and so we, so we get into the guilt. So the more one is actively involved in the guilt, the more one feels that one is worthless, not good, not loved, not worthy of love, etc. And what effect does that have? The effect that have is it creates a kind of a horrible, painful spiritual vacuum, and nature abhors a vacuum. And what comes into that vacuum is a great longing. And that great longing will so often be turned right back in the way that caused that initial problem that set the thing in motion in the first place. The more one is down with self, the more one longs to be free from that pain, to be loved, not to feel worthless and unloved, to be praised and not be blamed, and so on and so forth. Then one tries at some point to make it happen. And because one's, again, working from the wrong premise, one will make the same kind of mess. And so you get these cycles. And so often it's being fueled. We can see that, this is the thing about guilt, that we can believe that the self-blame is a kind of humility, and that it's good that we blame ourselves. It's all right to be down on ourselves because, after all, we keep proving to ourselves that we are bad. So the self-blame is to blame oneself is somehow to be humble, and that's a virtue. But the more one blames oneself, the more one is actually fueling the longing, the desire. And it can be a fierce longing, a fierce desire that causes one to make the mistakes that one then uses as the reason to blame oneself, you see. And you've got to cut through it somewhere. It was a big revelation for me when I was a young monk, when I realized, because of certain habitual things I was doing, I couldn't stop myself. Okay, I don't seem to be able to be good at stopping myself here. All right, I gotta start somewhere. Where I'm going to stop is to stop being down on myself when I do make the same old mistakes again. And that was a conscious choice I had to make, because I realized I had to do something. But clearly there were certain things that were, at that point I just didn't have a handle on. I had no idea at that point the enormous powerful karmic forces that underlay the difficulties I was having in certain areas. Only years later, when I experienced some of that in its full intensity, I realized, well, whew, it could have been a lot worse. Cut yourself some slack here. Yes, one may not have been a saint. One may not be a saint. One may never be a saint. Let's forget about that. Isn't it good just to be human? So I've talked at some length about guilt here because it is such an endemic and uh, it fuels so much human suffering and misery. It really does. And we can think of externalized blame in the same way. Again, I can't say too many times, if we don't want to blame ourselves, we must not blame others. If you can't catch it on the self-blame side, then catch it on the blaming others side and be really careful. There's a verse in the Bible I remember learning as a kid. It goes something along the lines of, the man who says, "Thou fool," is in danger of hellfire. The man who calls another a fool is in danger of hellfire. Well, that's not hellfire. We can leave aside the hellfire, you know, that's an eternal punishment from God, and just think in terms of the hellfire that comes from punishing ourselves. If we despise or blame another, we will do it to ourselves. It is a law of the universe that there is no self. And that however we think we can distinguish it between self and other in our judgments, we actually can't. This is why sympathy is a wisdom, not just a state of, it's not a feeling. In Buddhism, sympathy is a wisdom. Dogen said, we see others doing unwise things, things that we know or create suffering, though we can feel sorry for them. Rather than blame. And know that, you know, there but for the grace of God goes me. And that is really true. None of us knows what we do in another person's place. Just from this discussion of this one distorting influence of guilt, one can see how, and from the way I'm talking right, you can see how crucial the precepts are. Each and every one of the precepts, just how crucial they are. The one I've been, you know, what precepts have I been emphasizing today? Well, you can see a whole handful of them. Do not speak against others. You could also say, do not think against others. Do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. You could say, do not be mean in giving either Dharma or wealth. Do not be mean in giving the Dharma to yourself through self-forgiveness. Self-acceptance. Do not be mean in giving the Dharma to others through acceptance and forgiveness. Do not say that which is not true. Do not think and say that which is not true about oneself or others. It may be true, yes, I did this at such and such a time. I did this. And yes, I recognize that's something I'd prefer not to do again. That may be true, but therefore I am a bad person and I do not have the Buddha nature. That is not true. See? Yes, there was this mess and I have to live with the consequences. Bow to the consequences and let them teach me. Don't carry it further into self-blame, self-hatred, self-loathing, and so on. And it's easier said than done, because these two can be so deeply habitual. In fact, they are the most deeply habitual of all our tendencies that produce suffering, going down to the very root of self-judgment. The other night when I talked about I emphasized the importance of really just being able to sit still through the kind of push and pull of influences, both from within one's own karmically conditioned dispositions and the influences of others, to just sit still through them. And that really is talking about the importance of using meditation in the midst of our daily life to keep in a straight line with truth, to keep in harmony with truth. And today I'm emphasizing really the precepts, how important it is to really take the precepts to heart and take them seriously for the same purpose, to stay in alignment with truth, to be able to look at truth along a straight line. Should the Buddha, should the Dharma, should the Sangha.